This is the best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, coming to you from the rolling hills of Shinnecock. Shinnecock Hills, Southampton, New York, side of the Dustin Johnson Invitational. That's what it feels like. DJ at 4-under and in the clubhouse. In the lead, a tournament that he has won previously, a tournament to which, you could go through probably four U.S. Opens he should have won or could have won. He's won one, and he is in pole position. The course not playing easy, not playing crazy difficult, but there is the thought that wind is going to pick up. So we're keeping an eye on that as Dustin Johnson at 4-under. He's got, a five-stroke lead as of right now on the leaderboard. Then you have Portugal taking on Spain. The Portuguese are up 2-1 at the half. That's on Fox, Big Fox, I believe, right? So on Big Fox right now, you have Portugal, Spain. On Fox Sports 1, you have the U.S. Open. Coverage of the 118th U.S. Open is on FS1. It switches over to Big Fox essentially after Ronaldo is done. And if he can take down the Spaniards, it would be a huge rivalry win. But the news that everyone in sports is talking about just so happens to be coming from the NBA and from Los Angeles. No, it is not LeBron James yet committing to play for the Lakers. Instead, it's multiple reports. Lots of sources reporting Kawhi Leonard wants out of San Antonio. And we had thought bygones might be bygones. The healing process had begun, and apparently not so much. Much like the healing process took a long time with his thigh, the healing process is obviously not nearly as far along or may not ever happen between San Antonio and Kawhi Leonard. And let's be honest, San Antonio screwed this thing completely, 10 ways sideways. They just did. It's not that there's not culpability from Kawhi's side or from his uncle/agent's side. It's not that the Spurs haven't had success with players who have had rough years, who have had rough dealing with the players and with the management in the past. But the idea that Tony Parker, who's been a part of several of these title runs, comes out and says, "Hey, my injury was 100 times worse." You know, Manu Ginobili talked about them moving on without Kawhi Leonard. When guys who are longtime Spurs and thought to be kind of mouthpieces for Greg Popovich, and then Pop even had some negative things to say about Kawhi Leonard in terms of updating people on his progress and what would happen. Well, you have to talk to his group. This is what happens when you let others in on the negativity within your workplace. I think I've told this story before, but it's worth telling again. I don't think that Mack Brown is the greatest coach in football history. I don't believe that. Okay, just for the record, it's not that Mack Brown is a great coach. But if you look at, I think it was like 1984 was the last time before Mack Brown got there. If you look at the University of Texas, you're like, man, how come Texas isn't better? We're talking about the University of Texas. They got all the facilities, they got all the money, and they can get any player they want in the state of Texas. How come they haven't won more? Mack Brown gets there, takes over for John Makovic. It was a complete and utter disaster. He goes 9-3, 9-5, 9-3, and then goes on a rip to which every year from 2001 to 2009, he wins at least 10 games in the Big 12. Not only did he win at least 10 games, but he only lost two bowl games. One, and his last game during that run was in the BCS National Championship game. Remember, Colt McCoy got hurt on the opening drive, and he had to put Garrett Gilbert in. And, yes, Alabama won the game, won the national championship, but playing without Colt McCoy, I mean, that was playing without their best player. Only lost two bowl games, one without his quarterback during that run. Now, it did fall apart, and it really fell apart because of Garrett Gilbert and making some bad selections at the quarterback position. Jameis Winston wanted to come. Thanks, no thanks. Johnny Manziel wanted to come. Well, we can play at cornerback. RG3 wanted to come, we'll play you at cornerback. Hey, look, if you're a great quarterback somewhere else, there's a pretty good chance that Mack Brown offered you a scholarship as a cornerback. That said, Mack Brown did something for a decade to which hadn't been done before. He stabilized Texas football at the top of the football universe. And he did so because there was never anything negative out of the house. If you ever went to a coach's clinic, he would ask coaches, "Coach, how's your season? Coach, how's your season?" You go around the room. And then if there was ever an assistant coach or head coach that would say, "Well, we had a tough year. We had this problem. We had that problem." He would go back and say, "You're fired. You're fired. You're fired. Why are you fired?" "Because I don't know anything about your program. The last thing you should be doing is making my mind work and thinking that something negative by relaying to me something bad happened this season. If you had a bad year, tell somebody outside the program, when we didn't win enough games, we got great kids, and we're going to have a great year next year, really fired up." That's it. And that sounds cliche. And that sounds, it sounds very, you know, political, like you're trying to constantly spin things positive. But you know what? This is the other side. What is the win in Tony Parker saying his injury was 100 times worse? What's the win in Manu Ginobili saying that the Spurs should learn to move on without Kawhi Leonard? What is the win in Greg Popovich pointing out that now instead of talking to Kawhi, you got to talk to his group? I'll tell you what the loss is, Kawhi Leonard. You run the risk of ticking somebody off so much they're like, "Don't care, I'm out." But we can offer you the Supermax. "Don't care, I'm out." Because when you say my injury was 100 times worse, and no one from the organization and even another player is like, didn't say out loud, "Tony's crazy, Tony doesn't speak for us," you're saying that organization is saying, "We think you're soft." And whether, even if that's not the case, that's how it's perceived by enough people that it gets back to Kawhi, which, "Hey, Kawhi, they're calling you soft. They're saying you're soft. They're saying you're not injured. You're faking it. You're protecting yourself. You're not part of the team. You're not part of the Spurs franchise. You got a group instead of being a guy. You're not your own man anymore. You're not your own man, and you're soft." No one wants to be called a liar. No one wants to be called a faker. And he was essentially called both, right? Remember the old Western? "You calling me a liar?" That's essentially what they did to Kawhi Leonard. And instead of going and pacing off 10 steps and drawing out the OK Corral, Kawhi Leonard says, "Check, please. I'm going to go back to Los Angeles." This is a huge one. The huge one. You know that trader Danny Ainge is going to make a call. You know that there are several other, maybe the Philadelphia 76ers make a call. Kawhi Leonard, by most people's estimation in the NBA, is believed to be the third best player in the league. Plays both ends, and though he can't carry your team scoring like LeBron and KD can, he does enough of all the other stuff. He can shoot threes, he can handle, he's not a great passer, but good enough. He can score in the low post, he can defend essentially any position on the floor. He's Draymond Green on defense with a very good offensive game to boot. And now he wants to come to Los Angeles, which there's a bunch of other things that change because of it. Does this allow the Lakers to get both Kawhi Leonard, not just both Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James, but also Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and LeBron James? Or do they no longer want Paul George and simply want Kawhi and LeBron? Or if they can't get LeBron, do they then get Paul George next year and just Kawhi this year? Do they make a trade? And if they do trade, who would they give up? I mean, this is huge, huge stuff. And then, of course, you got the Boston Celtics that have so many of those assets, but are they willing to part with those assets so that they can go for it and go for it now? By the way, if I'm the Boston Celtics, I would trade Jason Tatum. Yep, I would do it. If I can get Kawhi Leonard for Jason Tatum, or Kawhi Leonard for Jason Tatum and maybe Jaylen Brown, because they're that close. He's that good. And Kawhi Leonard only played 9 games last season, but the best you could hope for Jason Tatum is to be what Kawhi Leonard is, right? You have the, we hope Jason Tatum in a couple years becomes what this guy already is. So this is it's going to be a fascinating couple of weeks in the NBA with Kawhi Leonard wanting out. Now, also, it should be pointed out, just because you want out doesn't mean you get out. And there could be some groveling, and obviously there wasn't enough groveling with Kyrie, who wanted out of Cleveland and ended up getting traded. Here's the last thing we'll talk about is Phil Mickelson. He gets a birdie on five. He's 8 under for the tournament. Remember, Dustin Johnson, 4 strokes ahead. He's 8 over, sorry. Dustin Johnson, 4 strokes ahead at 4 under, and he is in the clubhouse in the lead. Everybody else is going to have to play catch-up. There's one other part. There was Colin Cowherd discussed earlier today whether or not Kevin Durant going to the Warriors ruined the league. I don't believe he ruined the league, but I do believe that if Kawhi gets out of San Antonio, if Paul George gets out of Oklahoma City, one of the big issues that the league is going to continue to have is these smaller market teams keeping their stars from going to Boston, which is not a huge market, but it's a huge franchise, or to not as huge as New York, Philadelphia, Houston, L.A., or San Francisco.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Michael Lee is an outstanding writer for Yahoo Sports, covers the NBA, and he joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. By the way, we'll get you an update on scoring at the World Cup. If you like scoring in soccer and rivalry game, we got both for you with Spain and Portugal going at it. Within the 62nd minute of a 90-minute match. On the other hand, if you like scoring in golf, you're not going to see much of it as Dustin Johnson continues to lead. You'll get both scores upcoming in about 10 minutes. Let's welcome in Michael Lee in 1 second. Cars are a lot like sports. You got to have the right tools. You want to go far. Luckily, AutoZone is a free loan and tool program with over 100 specialty tools to get the job done right. Stop in today. Deposit is required. Get in the zone. AutoZone. Michael, what's your reaction to the news that Kawhi Leonard wants out of San Antonio?
I guess this has been building for several months, so it's not all that surprising. I mean, the fact that he only played 9 games in the regular season and he wasn't with the team during the playoffs, you could score the sense that something was amiss and you just wanted to see how it was going to play out. But the fact that he was willing to leak this to multiple outlets before even talking to the Spurs lets you know that he's been plotting his escape for some time. And I guess now we have to wait to see who can come up with the right trade chips to bring him on, because he is the big domino. I mean, even before LeBron, he's the domino that everything is going to react to from here on out.
Okay, before we get to where he could possibly go and how it shapes what the league will look like next year, look, I would say that he's culpable on some level. You know, he didn't come back. You know, whether he could have come back from injury or couldn't have, you know, how it was handled wasn't perfect. The sense that San Antonio people got that he had changed since his uncle became his representative, and the fact that they felt like they had to go through other people in order to get to him obviously was bothersome. But I also think San Antonio handled this thing poorly. Like Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili, especially Tony Parker, coming out as critical of Kawhi Leonard, and Greg Popovich coming out and several of the statements that he made. How much blame do you think San Antonio should get for his ultimate departure?
A little, but not a lot. Because I hate that. You got to look at this. Kawhi Leonard was a 15th pick of the 2011 draft. The Spurs invested a lot of time, a lot of effort in helping him become an MVP candidate, the best two-way player in the game. They had Chip Englund help him with his shot. They did everything to provide a platform for him to become a star, and he did. Give him credit for doing that. And I think that what Tony Parker did this year, that was the frustration of an old vet who feels like his window is closing. This is it. He doesn't have any more opportunities to compete with a championship caliber team. Kawhi was the only link. I could see him snapping and losing it, because this is what happened with the Spurs. Guys want to be there. Guys want to be a part of it. Guys want to be with their teammates. And I'm not saying the Spurs don't think everything perfectly, but this is a unique situation for them. They've never been in a place where a guy didn't want to be there. When I look at Greg Popovich, this is a guy who said for years, when they were at their heyday, of the dynasty that I'm leaving when Tim leaves. I'm leaving when Tim leaves. Kawhi gave him a reason to stay. He stuck around. He made a commitment to Lonnie that he'd be there to the end of his contract. He made a commitment to LaMarcus Aldridge that he'd be there for him when they signed him in free agency. He did all this because he hoped that Kawhi would be there and that he would be the guy to lead them into the next era. Kawhi gave them hope that there was a future with Tim in a rocking chair. Now there is no hope because Kawhi wants out. So, I mean, you can blame both sides, but I do look at the Spurs and feel like even if they did make mistakes, they had the right heart. They had the right intent. I don't think I ever questioned the Spurs' intent, no matter what happened, even if they mismanaged his leg injury. I don't think they wanted Kawhi to be hurt. I don't think they wanted to risk their future by having him go out there and be damaged goods. They wanted what was best for him. And I don't think there's ever been a moment up until this that you could doubt they didn't want the best for Kawhi Leonard, because they knew that was the best for the Spurs.
Michael Lee from Yahoo Sports joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Reports are also Adrian Wojnarowski reporting he wants to go to L.A. How plausible is that?
I would lean more towards the Clippers than the Lakers. I mean, I think that they have an obligation to trade him now because he wants out and he can leave next year if they don't trade him. But they don't have to give him to the team that he wants. They don't have to trade him to the Lakers. I mean, I'm sure everybody would love to be a Laker, but considering the history of the Spurs and the Lakers, the way they've battled and fought over the years, I have a hard time seeing Greg Popovich saying, okay, let's make the Lakers better, make us worse, and give Kawhi exactly what he wants. I think they're going to be looking to try to trade him to the Eastern Conference. And if they do trade him to L.A., they trade him to the Clippers. I just can't see them trying to help out a longtime rival and allow Kawhi to reach, you know, ascend to a level of stardom with the Lakers that he spurned with the Spurs.
All right, what about Boston? They reportedly called midseason and wanted to make a trade. Could you see a way in which they moved into Boston?
Yeah, I could, because Boston obviously has the assets. They have the draft picks. They have the players in either Brown or Tatum. You know, I would probably put out Brown instead of Tatum if I'm the Celtics. And you just have a chance to have so many wings there that you could be the team that could really compete with the Golden State Warriors for the championship, because you have so much versatility and you have a lot of, you know, talent that's in its prime. So Boston makes a lot of sense. But if I'm Boston and they want Tatum, I'm probably saying no way. The other team I have to look at is Philadelphia. That's the one that makes probably the most sense to me, because they still have a number one pick in Fultz. They have the number 10 pick this year, and they have the ability to give them something they could build with toward the future. We all know that Fultz's shot is one of the questions about his future. Like, what is it? Can he shoot? But they have the staff, again, who we didn't think Kawhi could shoot when he came into the league, and he turned into a pretty good three-point shooter. So I think that the 76ers make sense also with the Brett Brown connection. He's one of Brett Popovich's closest friends in the league, and I feel like he'd be like, well, if I can't have him, at least I can still keep him in the Spurs family. Now, the key would be whether, you know, Kawhi wants to be in Philadelphia, because if he doesn't want to commit long-term, you don't want to give up their future. But I think Philadelphia is a large enough market. You'd be with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and you have a chance to really compete and contend. The Eastern Conference is a much easier path to championships. It would give him the chance to win. It would provide him with a platform being in a major market, and maybe he can get the shoe deals that he wants, because he'll be contending and in a big city. So Philly probably makes a lot more sense to me than any place else.
Yeah, the only thing is, I think you're underselling a little bit that the Lakers would be, I mean, I think they're willing to part with Brandon Ingram.
I love the assets. I just don't love, I don't see Pop saying, yeah, I want to help the Lakers.
Yeah, but you also know you end up getting handcuffed by some of this stuff, right? Because in order for a team to trade for him, he has to be willing to commit long term to that team. Nobody's going to move mountains to trade for a guy who's going to leave in 1 year, you know?
Well, Oklahoma City did. I mean, they did for Paul George. You know, that's the thing.
But they're also Oklahoma City, right? And
yeah.
And who did that actually work out better for? So.
Exactly. It worked out well for Indiana, but it could work out well for the Spurs. I mean, if you're in the business and this is what you're trying to do, you're trying to help yourself. You know, Kawhi's trying to help himself, but maybe he goes somewhere else and he goes there and likes it. I mean, he can want the Lakers all he wants. They don't have to give it to him.
How do you think this affects LeBron's decision?
Oh, majorly. That's why I said he's the big domino, because if Kawhi winds up going to the Lakers, then all of a sudden you have the ability to get Kawhi through a trade, and then you could sign two max guys. That could be the difference maker. That could be what sets them up to really compete with the Warriors. I'm looking at a team with Paul George, LeBron James, and Kawhi Leonard, and I'm like, whoa, that's a frightening squad. That's a unit that I want to see compete. I want to see how they make it work. It's an attractive place. LeBron already has homes in L.A. We already know the whole story about why the Lakers would be a great place for him without Kawhi Leonard. But if you can bring two wing players, younger wing players in their prime, all-star, MVP caliber wing player in Kawhi Leonard, all of a sudden, LeBron's right there. He's able to compete for championships, not just go to L.A. for his family. He can go there for his family and have a chance to win.
What about Paul George? Does this make Paul George more likely to stay in Oklahoma City, though, because you don't actually necessarily need him if you're the Lakers? If you can get two, do you actually need to go and get Paul George?
Well, I mean, considering the way the game is played now, you need as many wings as possible. You need as many versatile two-way players as possible. I mean, can you imagine a lineup with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on the wings? LeBron can play the four. I mean, you can find a way to make it work. You play Kawhi at the two, Paul at the three, and then you have a perimeter defensive group that you're just not going to be able to score on. And you throw that out against the Warriors, you have a frightening defensive unit. And I feel like if I'm the Lakers, I'm not really worried about position. I want to have the most talented group I could possibly assemble, and you can't get much better than that.
Michael Lee from Yahoo Sports. Great stuff, man. Interesting day. We really appreciate you coming on and giving us your perspective.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
All right, it's Michael Lee from Yahoo Sports joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
Nick Nurse is the new head coach of the Raptors. He was elevated from being an assistant. Nick joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. And Nick, look, it's been wild, right? You're number one seed, and then you get swept by the Cavs. Dwayne Casey gets fired. You get an interview, then you get a job. That's a whirlwind of emotions over the last month and a half, 2 months or so. What's this been like for you?
Well, you're right. It's been a whirlwind, a bit of a roller coaster, you know. I said to somebody yesterday that, you know, this is a time of great joy for me and my family, obviously, right? This is a long, lifelong goal to get here, but some of it's tempered by the way our season ended. I mean, you know, you played, and when your team doesn't play as well as you want to end the season, your summer's a little bit longer than you wanted it to be, and some of that still resonates, and I probably wouldn't be talking to you here today if that wasn't the case, you know?
Yeah, I guess the outsider asked the question, why would, if they weren't happy with Dwayne Casey, why would you hire an assistant coach on his staff? What's the smart and reality answer to that?
Well, I mean, as you know, as an assistant, you're not calling the shots or coaching the team from a couple seats away. You know, that's you do your best to give as much input as you can, and you go from there. But, again, this caught me a little bit off guard, Doug. I think the whole thing did. I thought, when they finally made the announcement that they were, going to get rid of Case, obviously they met with me and wanted to talk to me, and certainly going to do that. And, I presented my case of my familiarity with the team. You know, we've got a lot of pieces in place. I think that's a big reason I get elevated up. I do know the players and got a rapport with them, and have implemented a lot of offensive ideas that was my kind of remit, over the last 5 years. And they wanted to keep a lot of things intact, except maybe just a little different voice, and maybe we can go a little further than we have been.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my, again, now my response to people who said that was like, look, sometimes the head coach, and look, Dwayne ends up, while I'm sure he didn't want to leave the Raptors as close as you guys felt like you were, like he ends up with a new 5-year deal with a new team and a new general manager. And so there is some sense of a win-win, but sometimes there just is a need for another voice. Is that what limited you? Is it something mental that LeBron has on you guys? Like what has it been?
Well, I think, you know, Doug, we've got to play better in the playoffs is one thing. We've got to, you know, use the regular season as a bit more of a testing ground and just play a little bit better. I think James, LeBron James has a pretty good hold on more than just us, you know. But we need to just play better, and we need to get better and continue to improve and see if we can't do that, you know.
Yeah, no, I got you. Are you guys helping LeBron pack for LA? Is that one way in which you can do it? Like, hey, dude, we're gonna help you here.
I don't think I can comment on what LeBron's doing, Doug. So let's just wait and see what happens.
Fair enough. Nick Nurse joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. I mentioned, you know, you were a coach of the year in England. You know, you went to Northern Iowa, played there. Of course, after playing, became a coach. Worst gym you've ever coached in?
Worst gym ever? Well, mm-hmm. It was Milton Keynes in England. Milton Keynes. They had purple, like this light purple tape as the backboard square, and there were those old white wooden backboards. It was not.
No.
I didn't feel like a real big time situation.
Hey, when you were in Iowa, did you ever play? Did they have the fan backboards? You're not that old, right? You didn't have the fan.
I am definitely that old. You know.
Yeah, and so that means there's also 6-on-6 on the women's side when you were still playing, right?
For sure, classic game.
Yeah.
Great.
I mean, everybody says from humble beginnings, but coaching in England, where they have a wooden backboard and a purple tape where the square should be, that's truly humble beginnings, is it not?
It is, Doug, but you know what? I was talking to our man, Brian Gates, yesterday, and we were talking about going from Enid, jumping in the van, and going up to Dodge City and playing a game, you know, and driving back. And, man, we were having fun. You know, we were coaching, and we were learning, and we were having fun. And looking back, it was a long road, but it was still fun and a heck of an experience.
Okay, so now, I mean, do you automatically go out and get a new suit guy? Do you stick with the same suits? Like, look, I mean, the sad thing is the entire world now knows what you make.
Yeah,
I mean, like, everybody's going to be asking to pick up a check at, and when you go to Las Vegas. The question becomes, do you go and get new suits, or you stick with the same suits?
Well, I kind of like to graduate them out. You know, I'll probably do my regular, get a few, three or four new ones every year, and just keep on doing what we were doing.
Nick Nurse joining us, new head coach of the Toronto Raptors. Is this roster a championship roster as it's currently comprised?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Why hasn't it been able? What in your mind is the, if you could make one adjustment, what would it be to take the step in the playoffs that you've been to the conference finals before? So it's not like you haven't taken steps before. What's missing?
Well, I just think we get better every year and we grow a little bit. We a little bit more confidence, a little bit more chemistry. And you know, you got to stay healthy and get some breaks and all those kind of things. Doug, you know, it's there's 29 teams in there chasing the W's, and it's a competitive league. But you know, we just gotta we're among those teams that can see it, and we just gotta try and get there. You know,
DeMar, obviously, you got to get more out of DeMar in the big playoff series. I'm sure you've had conversations with him. Some of that stuff, I'm sure you want to remain private, but to the best you can, what should his focus be to go from all-star and star to potential superstar? What does he need to continue to add?
Well, he does continue to add a lot of things every year, Doug. But, you know, again, there's certainly some things that we think we can do better. You know, he's expanding his range a little bit. His passing's getting better. Defensively, he's getting better. Just a little bit upgrade on some of those things. And there's a few specifics that I'm going to sit down and talk with him about, and we're going to have a plan for and see if we can't make a little bigger gains in some other areas.
Last year you guys went from kind of a high ball screen, not necessarily ISO, but trying to create the mismatch sort of offense, to really a lot of ball movement, at least in the regular season. It got a little stagnant in the postseason. Again, your roster's not complete, not set for next year. But if you had your druthers, and I know you already met with management, that's why you got the job, what's the style of attack offensively you think your team is best suited for?
Yeah, I mean, we want to move the ball, Doug, and we want to take advantage of what's there, a lot more cutting and a lot more attacking the rim, and continue to work on our three ball, et cetera. You know, we really upped our passing numbers last year. Our assist numbers went way up. Our true assists went way up. So you know, we're going to be a ball movement team and continue to make bigger. And we made a big stride in that last year, and we're going to continue to do that.
Great stuff. Well, Nick, listen, I'm so happy for you. I mean, I know this is a you're 50, and this has been the kind of a life's work. You've done great work in the G League, great work overseas, and as being an assistant coach in the NBA. Congrats on being rewarded with not just a head coach position. It's different, right? To get a head coach job is one thing. It's great. To get one with an actual good team that's going to be in the playoffs and have a chance to maybe win the whole thing, that's an amazing opportunity. Can't thank you enough for being our guest.
Thanks a lot, Doug. Great talking to you. Look forward to seeing you again.
No question. That's Nick Nurse, new head coach of the Raptors.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Alan Shipnuck joins us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. From Golf Magazine, also a noted golf author. All right, so what went wrong for Tiger? I mean, obviously, first hole of the tournament, he Vandevelded a couple of chips, but... it had to be more than just that.
Well, I mean, Tiger's had stage fright for a while on the first hole of any golf tournament, especially the ones he cares the most about.
It's crazy, though, right?
Yes and no. I mean, even in his prime, he would often jack his first tee shot on Augusta National over into the ninth fairway. I mean, he's human. But
he was good off the tee on one. He was on the fairway.
That worked out, but it just carried the nerves carried over to the next, like, five shots. But... I never bought into the fact that Tiger could even contend at this tournament on this golf course. If you look statistically, his putting and off the tee, he's average at best in the tour stats. And so for him to win here, he'd have to have the best week of the year off the tee and on the greens. That's a big ask for any player, especially one with that many miles, that much scar tissue.
All right, let's start with the putting, because the last two tournaments now, it's been an issue. And this is a guy that was 6 feet in. It was in the hole in his prime. And listen, I totally understand that you can lose your distance, or that you can wear down. He's the greatest iron player in the history of the tour. But you would think that putting was something that he could do during his rehab, that he could draw on some of the great putts of the past that he's made. How has the putting gone away here these past couple weeks?
It's not just these past couple of weeks. I mean, he's been especially bad. But nobody ever putts as well in their 40s as they did in their 20s.
That's weird, though. Shouldn't it be the other way around? Should you putt really well and not be able to swing a golf club as well?
I mean, the nerve endings. I think there's a school of thought in golf. You have a finite number of putts you're going to make in your life. Tiger used his up pretty quick, right? I mean, a lot of, you know, Hank Haney, when he wrote about this in his book, but he said when Tiger worked really hard on his putting, he putted well in tournaments, but he got over time in their relationship, he got lazier, and he just didn't want to work on his putting. And you can imagine a guy's been grinding since he was 3 years old, maybe standing on a green, hitting putt after putt gets a little boring. And so I think that could be an issue. And, you know, Tiger's talked a lot about his swing this year, about all the work he's doing on his swing. I'm not sure he's allowed enough time on his short game. So that could be part of it. You know, these greens are slopey, grainy, windy. I mean, a lot of guys look spooked out there, and it could just be that simple. You know, Tiger got up on the first couple holes, didn't hit great putts, and all of a sudden you start doubting yourself. There's any number of factors, but the larger trend for Tiger, even this year, as he's had this little renaissance, is he's not putting that great. He's just never going to be the putter he was.
Okay, so should that move us over into the he's not going to win a major camp?
I mean... Let's start with the Bob Hope Classic.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy hasn't won a golf tournament in eons. He hasn't won a major in a decade. But to think that he's going to come out here and win the Masters or win the U.S. Open, I mean, he's miles from that. He's just not as good a golfer as he used to be. He's not as good a golfer as a lot of the other guys on the board. I mean, the driver is such a weapon for Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and Justin Thomas. And Tiger is still a little fear in that driver swing. I mean, when he's not feeling confident, he goes those big wipey cuts, and he just doesn't let the club go. His accuracy and his distance are both good but not great compared to the other elite players. He's just not quite as good off the tee as the best guys in golf. And then his iron game, like we said before, Hale Irwin might disagree, but I mean, Tiger, as a one of the all-time great iron players for sure, his proximity to the hole is just not quite there. I mean, everything's just not as good as it used to be. And, you know, you can't underrate the amount of scar tissue the guy has had since, 2013 with shooting the 85 at the Memorial, taking a huge gouge of turf off the first tee at the Old Course, then dumping it in the burn, the chip yips. I mean, there's been a lot of failure in Tiger Woods' life as a golfer in the last 5 years, and that was something he never had to deal with.
Okay, so that's, you don't think he'll ever win a major again?
I'm not, if I had to say yes or no, right now I would say no. I just think there's too many holes in his game. And, you know, he's a single dad. He's got all these business things. He's flying around the world, you know, designing courses. He's got this whole corporate life. The game is not the most important thing to Tiger as it is to a Justin Thomas, who's single and is just lives and breathes the game. And I mean, that's natural, right? Tiger's been on the grind now for a quarter century. But I just think, there's a limited number of repetitions he can make with his back. I don't think he's practicing as hard. I'm not sure he wants to practice that hard. He can't do the schedule he wants. He's not even in the WGC. He's not in the top 50 in the world ranking. So, like, this year's been a little weird for him schedule-wise. There's just a lot of things working against him. They're subtle, but they add up. And so I think he's good enough to win a golf tournament if everything goes his way. But to do it on the most exacting setups with the most pressure at the events that he wants so badly, and Tiger just gets in his own way now.
Alan Shipnuck joining us from Golf Magazine, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let's talk about DJ, because you can talk all you want about the wind and the setup and how difficult it was for Tiger, but he's sitting there playing right next to him, right? And so obviously the wind and the setup didn't bother him nearly as much. He's always had just been a prodigious driver. I can't tell you how impressed I am by, you know, the majors that he's given away. That would make, you talk about scar tissue, I would just think that would create such scar tissue. But in 16, he won this thing, and this is, playing catch up has got to be hard, because these were probably the best conditions they're going to have, I would guess, this weekend, and no one's within four strokes of him. What impresses you about DJ?
Pretty much everything. The guy's a machine. I mean, he's driving it longer and straighter than anyone in the history of the game at an elite level. He's completely dialed in on his irons, his wedges. I mean, he's pin high on every hole. It's a ball striking clinic. I mean, Tiger said every putt looks like it's going. Even the ones that don't go in look like they're going in. We saw the hole out from the sand yesterday. I mean, he's just doing everything well. But, Dustin does not obsess about his place in golf history like Tiger Woods did. And so, yeah, did it suck to shoot 80 something and blow the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach? Yes. He got up the next week and just went and played golf. He's just a good old boy from South Carolina. He likes, cold beer and fast boats and pretty girls. And he can forget about the disappointments because it just doesn't resonate so deeply with him. He's like, hey, man, I'm making a great living. I'm having fun. I'm playing golf. What's a big deal? And that is the exact attitude you need in the U.S. Open. You just go out and keep hitting shots. And you're going to get punched in the mouth by this golf course a few times. But Dustin can take a punch better than anybody. He's proven that.
If there's one, is it Spieth or Rory, whose disappointing play is more disappointing to you?
Well, I mean, both of their struggles were predictable from the standpoint. Rory, he's been off and on all year long, and he hasn't won a major in 4 years, and he doesn't play well on firm, fast golf courses, and he doesn't play well in the wind. So this never set up as a great week for him. I mean, did I think he was going to shoot 80? No, but this is just not his kind of place or his kind of week. You know, Spieth's putting problems have been well documented, but he's fourth on tour strokes gained tee to green. I mean, he's been striking the ball beautifully all year, and that just kind of deserted him yesterday.
Which is crazy because he was a great putter up until, reputation-wise, I guess,
yeah.
Great putter until the last year or so.
So the thing about Spieth that's interesting is he says in college and even at the outside of his poker, he wasn't a very good putter. And he sort of willed himself to become great through technique and repetition and belief. And so the question is, did he putt 2 years out of his mind above his pay grade, essentially? And has he reverted to the mean? Or is this just 6 months of bad putting? But whatever it is, he's been really shaky. And, even when he was making putts from the mid-range, 15, 20, 25 feet, a historical rate, he was still a little shaky on the short putts, you know, looking at the hole. I mean, there's always been a little flinch in 6 feet and in. And so now that's gotten worse, and he's not making any putts from length. So his ball striking is good enough to keep him hanging around week to week, but if the putter's not there, it's hard for him to be at that elite level.
Should be pointing out Ian Poulter's birdied the last two holes, so he's at 2 under. Making a little run at Dustin Johnson, who's been in the clubhouse for a couple of hours now. Alan Shipnuck joining us, senior golf writer for Golf Magazine. It's the Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So, feels like bad for golf, though. Like, I mean, I understand that the course is set up beautifully. It's a really hard test, and it's much more fair than it was last time around. But DJ, I'll watch. But without that group of younger guys and without Tiger Woods in the hunt, it feels like it's going to be a tough weekend for the sport.
Yeah, DJ just kind of strangled the life out of this tournament, going out so early on the second round, shooting that number that no one's going to catch, it looks like. But, you know, there's some stirrings. I mean, Justin Rose, he's not a sexy golfer, but he's world-class. He's a potential Hall of Famer. You know, he can give DJ a fight. Having Poulter in the last group playing along Dustin on Saturday, that would be fun because Poulter's such a great anti-hero that people love to root against and someone like to root for him, and he's fiery.
Who likes to root for Ian Poulter?
People in England.
Okay.
Some of them.
Right.
Actually, most of them prefer Paul Casey or Luke Donald or Justin Rose, but he's fun to watch because he's fiery and he struts around like a peacock, and I mean, it's way more fun to have Ian Poulter on the leaderboard than not. So he'll add a little juice. And, you know, there's guys lurking. Like, I mean, Koepka, he went 5 under for 7 holes in the middle of his round. He went from totally out of the golf tournament. He's +2 overall. He's 6 behind Dustin. But if he can get in the barn with a couple more birdies, you know, defending champ, a ton of firepower, he could make a run. You know, Henrik Stenson, it's fun to have him from – the golf purists just love to watch him hit the ball. I mean, his strike is more pure than anybody's.
Ricky's around.
So the point is you need all these guys to play well and add some heat. If they start falling back, this could be a coronation, and Dustin could make Sunday very anticlimactic. So I hear what you're saying. There's not a bunch of glittering names, but there's a lot of good, solid guys. And I think we need to root for Poulter, and we need to root for Fowler because they add some box office.
All right, I'll root for Ricky. I'll root for Poulter to be there and then to just gag all over himself late.
Well, I mean, even that's compelling.
Right, that's compelling.
I mean, the thing about Poulter is he's got the swing of about a 2 handicapper. I mean, he's not – the other guys on the reins, they look at him like, how has this dude done what he's done? It's all willpower. It's all heart. It's all short game magic. And those intangibles are fun. You know, does he have a chance on paper against Dustin Johnson? No way. Dustin will crush him. But – the U.S. Open's a kind of a funny animal, and this is an exacting course, and it could get interesting. So you got to root for Poulter just because he'll spice things up.
Alan Shipnuck for Golf Magazine. Alan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.